Hebrews chapter 13. I became a believer when I was 13 and a half. And I became a believer through the testimony of a Mormon friend who became a believer in Jesus. Someone had told me that the Mormons were Jews. I said, they're Jews and they believe in Jesus. This is, maybe I should check this out, you know. It's complicated, but that's a good summation. And so I became a believer at 13 and a half. And slowly found out that there were other Jewish people that believed in Jesus who cared about being Jewish. And one of the things that I've learned in the 25, almost 26 years, hold on, you know, I almost did something. I'm going to ask my wife to stand. You know, she hides. She does this on purpose. Carla, can you please stand? She absolutely hates that, but you have to understand that behind every good man is an even better woman, okay? And so I have to recognize her. I've been bringing her with when I travel just because I need the encouragement, and she enjoys getting out. But no, she's an important part of our work in Skokie and our congregation, and I really appreciate her encouragement in our ministry because it has truly been almost 26 years of ministry together. And in all those 26 years of ministry, there has never been a situation in a congregation or in a community gathering where there's ever been dissonance. It's amazing. No problems whatsoever. People never fight. People never disagree. No, isn't it true that as followers of the Messiah, remembering that our God is one and our Messiah has called us to be one, how often we don't agree with one another? Now, you know what? You get two Jews, you get three opinions, all right? So disagreeing is okay. Disagreeing is all right. That's how things get hammered into a better situation. You know, I argue my positions, and someone else argues their position, and when everything is said and done, often we get a better product. Many years ago, I was in business for a period of time, and we produced some great concepts and some great products because people of different ideas argued together in a productive way and produced a better outcome. Often, I mean, really, the issue isn't being disagreeing. The issue is being disagreeable. It's being disagreeable when we are disagreeable with one another. I'm going to read something. I read this some time ago, found it to be very interesting and very helpful. During World War II, Hitler commanded all religious groups to unite so that he could control them. Among the Brethren Assemblies, this is a Christian denominational group. Among the Brethren Assemblies, half complied and half refused. Those who went along with the order had a much easier time. Those who did not faced harsh persecution. In almost every family of those who resisted, someone died in a concentration camp. When the war was over, feelings of bitterness ran deep between the groups and there was much tension. Finally, they decided that the situation had to be healed. Leaders from each group met in a quiet retreat. For several days, each person spent time in prayer, examining his own heart in the light of Messiah's commands. Then they came together. Francis Schaeffer, a leading Christian theologian who told of the incident, asked a friend who was there, "What did you do then?" "We were just one," he replied. As they confessed their hostility and bitterness to God and yielded to his control, the Holy Spirit created a spirit of unity among them. Love filled their hearts and dissolved their hatred. As a Messianic Jewish movement, even within our union of Messianic Jewish congregations, there have been at times disagreements that lead us to being disagreeable. Yet God has called us to love one another. God has called us to love one another. When love prevails among believers, when love prevails among believers, especially in times of strong disagreement, it presents to the world an indisputable mark of a true follower of Messiah Yeshua. When love prevails among believers, not great theology, although good theology and great theology is important, but when love prevails, that is an indisputable mark of a true follower of the Messiah, Yeshua. What I want to challenge us in this morning is the issue of love. I want to challenge us in demonstrating our love. How are we demonstrating our love for fellow believers? How are we demonstrating our love for fellow believers? Because it is the demonstration of our love that validates the confession of our faith. We're not doing religion. That's not what this is about. The Jewish community in and of itself has great religion. What they lack? Messiah Yeshua, the Spirit of God moving in their midst because they do not recognize the Mashiach, the Messiah. But Judaism as itself is a great religion. But this morning, I hope you are not here to do Judaism. But you are here to come together in the spirit of the Messiah, to love him, to worship him, and to love one another. Take a look at the text, Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews chapter 13, there's just three verses we're going to look at. The first one's very short. Hebrews 13:1, it says, let brotherly love continue. Let brotherly love continue. What is brotherly love? What is brotherly love? I have two brothers. One who's older and one who's younger, all of us 1 year apart. As you can imagine, we had all kinds of brotherly love when we were together. I actually have a tooth that I'm going to have to get work done that my brother blessed me with many years ago during a fight. You know, I remember those days of brotherly love. What is real brotherly love? Here's a quote from a theologian, Craig Lane. He says, the quality of love that binds the community together as brothers and sisters within the family of faith. What is brotherly love? It's the quality of love. It's not something that is just there. It's really measured by its depth, its stickiness, the reality of it, how it makes us feel with one another. I was talking with somebody the other day, and they were telling me about the fact that they feel so lonely. They feel so lonely. When we, as members of the body of Messiah Yeshua, are in relationship with one another, when we are truly living out love, brotherly love, we are interested in knowing where one another truly are. With this particular individual, I encourage them to consider that they are part of a group, that they are not alone, but to understand very clearly that they are loved. And that part of not feeling alone is being loved by others and loving others as well. 1 John chapter 3, now I'm going to bounce around. Just feel free to listen as I read. But 1 John chapter 3, verse 23. Says the following. Yochanan, John is, of course, articulating to these believers, and a big chunk of what he's saying has to do with love. John, 1 John chapter 3, verse 23 says, now this is his commandment, that we should believe in the name of his Son, Yeshua the Messiah, and love one another just as he commanded us. Is there someone that you really struggle with loving? Is there someone in your life that drives you crazy? That really annoys you, that has hurt you and continues to hurt you and doesn't recognize that they hurt you, and because of all of this, you just can't love them. You don't want to be with them. You don't want to be around them. Our Messiah commanded us to love one another. What is the quality of your love for the people in your life who are part of the body of Messiah? What is the quality of your love? Is it an active love? Is it a passive love? Is it a non-existing love? What is the quality of your love? We are called to love one another. What is the quality of your brotherly love for those in the family of Messiah? But let's ask this question, really. How does one live out brotherly love? Again, my brothers, when we got into the Glebe Boys, we had a reputation. Well, I grew up in Northern California. And my older brother really was a bad guy. I think it's hilarious. I'm a rabbi. My younger brother works for UPS. My older brother is a bounty hunter. How does one become a bounty hunter? I have no idea. All I can say is that you could have pegged it early on in his life that he was going to head in a different direction. My older brother, he would tell me that he loved me. And that the bottom line is no one else was allowed to beat me up but him. That's love. That's love. That's love. But what is, honestly, what does it mean to live out brotherly love? We talked about it briefly, but part of what it means to live out brotherly love is to demonstrate genuine concern for the welfare of fellow believers, both physical and spiritual. If we looked, I'm not going to turn there, but Acts chapter 2, people are basically getting saved everywhere. You know, 5,000 people hear this great sermon from Peter, and they become believers. And everybody's like, what do you do with all these people? Well, you have to take care of them. The circumstances are unique. People have come in for Shavuot, for Pentecost, and they're in Jerusalem. They hear this amazing message, and they don't want to go home. They want to learn more about who Yeshua the Messiah is. And so they stick around. And where do they live? They live in your house. All right, so we're all there. We're the 120. We're part of that situation taking place in Pentecost, Acts chapter 2. And where are they going to live? They're going to live with you. And what are they going to eat? They're going to eat your food. And what are they going to wear? They're going to wear your clothes. And what does it say? That the people took care of them. People took care of one another. There was a genuine concern for one another. Genuine. It wasn't, if you wash my hands, I'll wash your hands. It wasn't that at all. It was selfless giving, genuine concern for the physical needs of people. But it was all really related to the fact that there was genuine concern for the spiritual needs of people. To really demonstrate love, to live out love, we need to be concerned for where people are at, both physically and spiritually, within the body of Messiah. We're to start there. I often find as a rabbi doing 26 years of ministry that I enjoy spending most of my time outside the body of Messiah. Why? Sometimes it's just easier. Right? Isn't it easier to love people sometimes outside the body? Part of it is as a body of Messiah, we don't understand that we need to be dying for one another. Talk more about that in a second. To demonstrate genuine concern for the physical, spiritual welfare of other people. We're in a spiritual war. We're in a battle. When you think of people around this room, who's struggling? Who is struggling under the fight? In the book of Galatians, which within our Messianic Jewish community, for some reason, gets a bad rap. It's a great book, especially when it's taught properly. Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, it says, "Brethren, if someone is caught doing something wrong, you who are directed by the Ruach, restore such a person in the spirit of gentleness, looking closely at yourself so you are not tempted also. Bear one another's burdens. And in this way you fulfill the Torah of Messiah." We struggle against spiritual forces. How are you supporting the person next to you? How are you supporting them? Are you praying for them? Are you really praying for them? Are you making sure that you're going around and encouraging people in the community, especially those you know who are in difficult circumstances? We must do that. We all need that. And it is a very tangible demonstration of brotherly love. The other thing we have to do is we must learn to show brotherly love by demonstrating patience and understanding within our relationships among believers. We really have to demonstrate patience and understanding. Patience and understanding. God, teach me patience. And teach me it now, you know? That's our mentality, isn't it? I didn't come up with that phrase. We want what we want, and we want it now. Patience in our world, think about it. We're losing patience. How many of you never bother to leave a voicemail any longer? How many of you never bother to leave a voicemail? I know in my work with young people, they don't leave voicemails. You know why? They don't check voicemails. Because they're impatient. They want to get you right now. you know, they can't get you on the phone, they send you a text. They shoot you an email. They don't even use email anymore. It's too slow. Texts, you know, Snapchat you with something to get your attention. We're an impatient society today. But in terms of demonstrating brotherly love, we must understand the importance of patience. It's one of those parts of the fruit of the Spirit, to be patient, especially with one another, and understanding one another. Understanding one another. And again, I'm not going to read all these, but 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. There, Shaul, Paul is talking to Timothy about respecting older people. You know, one of the things that's really sad to see in our society is that our society is beginning to really discourage respect for elders. You may say, you're kidding me. Where have you been? This has been going on forever. No. It's much worse now than ever. We are living in much more of a youth culture. Those of you who are in your 30s, you're old. What do you know? Unless you're 18 to 25, you're a has-been. You're over the hill. You may say, you're kidding me. Oh, it's getting pretty bad. You know, you got an electronic issue now with your laptop, your iPad, you hand it to a five-year-old. They've got it all figured out. Right? I'm Gen Xer. People always used to, the joke was if you needed to set your VCR, you give it to a Gen Xer. All right? Now, it's if you got electronic issues, give it to a five-year-old. I mean, because the world is getting so much younger, and the problem is we're losing respect for the elderly people, for older people. But what is it that we learn from older people? The realities of life. We need to be understanding. We need to be patient. We gain that understanding with proper respect for those who are older than us. The other thing we have to keep in mind is that in real relationship, because if you're demonstrating brotherly love, you're in real relationship, people will rub you the wrong way. Often, they'll do it unintentionally. Those of you who are married, men, we'll start with you. Have you ever just said something and completely ticked off your wife? I know I never do that. I didn't mean it. I didn't understand why you're upset with me. Understanding, patience. My wife has been around me long enough to know that I will say strange things and do strange things, often without any malicious intent. It's just the reality of being in close relationship with people. As followers of Messiah Yeshua, we need to understand what it means to understand one another. This wonderful text from the book of Ephesians, I'm just going to read this very quickly, Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians 4, verse 32. You probably all have it memorized. It says, instead, be kind to one another, compassionate, forgiving each other, just as God and Messiah also forgave you. You know, God is amazingly patient. He is not willing that any should suffer, but that all should come to repentance. Maybe you became a believer when you were young, just a child. I mean, in your life, the worst thing you ever did was tell your mom and dad no. Some of you came to faith later in life. I mean, I have heard stories of people who are murderers, serious criminals, who in the hardened state of prison genuinely came to faith. It does happen. Why? God is far more patient than we are. God is far more forgiving than we are. And God desires to save. We need to learn what it means to demonstrate brotherly love by being patient with the people around us. Not the theoretical, oh yeah, I want to learn to be patient to somebody I don't know. But the guy sitting down that aisle, I do not have patience for. We need to be patient and understanding and demonstrate brotherly love. It's what God wants us to do. Also, what it means to live out brotherly love, and this is a big issue within communities. It's a huge issue. I see it in my own. We must be willing to both accept and convey words of scriptural challenge given in love. We must be willing to both accept and convey. This is what's tough. I was at a conference and some people had a problem with me. It's exciting. When you get to be the president of the UMJC, you find that you have to be very careful. This is being recorded, right? I must always be very careful in whatever I say, because in my zeal to do something good, I brought offense. I didn't mean to cause offense, but I genuinely did. I did. And somebody got really upset. And so he and a few other people who also were offended by what it sat me down. And I'm a lunkhead. I'm thinking, what did I say? Come on. But it was very helpful for me. They forced me. They really did. I mean, let's be honest. You know, a bunch of leaders say, you've ticked us off. What am I going to say? I don't care. No, you know, they're coming to me. They are conveying to me that there's an issue. I must humbly sit myself down and listen to them. And it was helpful for me. Often what happens is that two people look at one another. Hey, how are you doing today? Oh, I'm doing good. How are you doing? I'm doing great. In reality, the conversation is die, die, die. Right? How do we get to those points in our lives within the body of Messiah? It's because one person's unwilling to speak truth in love. You don't want to go, I wish you would die, but can we talk about love now? But one person's willing to speak words of truth, the other person's unwilling to hear words of truth. What does it mean to demonstrate brotherly love? It means to be willing to both convey and to receive. We have to be willing to do that. You know, Matthew chapter 5, again, I keep bouncing around, but Matthew 5:23. Yeshua the Messiah makes this statement. He says, therefore, if you are presenting your offering upon the altar and there, remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go first be reconciled to your brother and then come and present your offering. You know, if you have any real issue with somebody, in humility, work it out. Work it through. But in humility. Sometimes, I mean, you can say, well, some people just are not willing to talk or listen or whatever. These things can happen, but from your perspective, are you operating in humility, willing to bring reconciliation, to be a reconciler? So critically important. You know, within our union, I use the union as an example because it's why not, you know? I mean, there have been loggerhead moments when people will not talk and interact with one another. Thank God that today, that's not really the case. It's wonderful to see what God is doing in our union. Think about it like this. How many of you want to reach Richmond, Virginia for Yeshua? How many of you want to reach this city, reach the Jewish community? Let's just reach everybody. Let's do it. How do we do that? You have to do it ultimately through love for those who are not believers by dying for them through the way you live your life. But you can't start dying for those people until you start dying for one another. If we as a union want to reach the Jewish community for Yeshua, if we want to truly make our Messiah Yeshua known among our people and see these congregations grow and strengthen, we as leaders within our union must demonstrate love for one another so in the process of us loving and understanding and being patient with one another, conveying words of truth, humbly listening to words of truth, whether they're hard or not, that God will be glorified and through our testimony of love, draw people in whom God would like to save. Our Skokie synagogue's unique. You know, Skokie is an interesting city. At one time, it had the highest per capita rate of Holocaust survivors anywhere in the world outside of Israel. People came from the camps, and whatever reason, bunch settled in Chicago, and a lot of them settled in Skokie and Lincolnwood. In our congregation, we've always had a number of children and grandchildren of survivors. And yet it's interesting to see how people have come to believe. 30,000 Jews live in Skokie. Actually, I put it like this. 30,000 Jews live in my neighborhood in Skokie. We have about 100,000 Jews within a 15-minute easy city drive. It's a lot of Jewish people. It's almost like Brooklyn, just a little cleaner. I think there's a couple of New Yorkers in the room. I got to be careful. We have seen people come to faith. It's interesting. One man who just moved from our community, moved out of the area, unfortunately, he's a son of Holocaust survivors. His father was an Auschwitz survivor. Very difficult, difficult family situation. And this man was dragged in by his daughter, who brought him in because she knew about us, because we do a lot of youth and children's work. And he comes in, and it's interesting, but he ultimately comes to faith in Yeshua. It took him about a year, but he comes to faith because of love. He sees the love in the community. There's another woman that my wife's always interacting with, Mildred. And Mildred is an 88-year-old Jewish woman, not a believer in Yeshua. To this day continues to say, I will never believe that Yeshua is the Messiah, but can you pray for my daughter? You know, what can I bring for the Kiddush? You know what I mean? But what is it that draws her is the love. Sometimes we think we have to have the liturgy and the tradition, and there's nothing wrong with good liturgy and good tradition. And by the way, the music is wonderful, okay? All these things are, yes, valuable and important, but nothing is more important than our love. They shall know you by your doctrinal statement. No. Although a doctrinal statement is important, they shall know you by your building fund. No. They shall know you by your love. Our love. What is the quality of our love? And then how are we demonstrating that love? Within this community, are you willing to accept what people are saying to you? But then are you also willing to convey words of spiritual encouragement when people need it? When people, like myself, offend or step out or say dumb things or something, you know, and they need that gentle correction. It's love. Believe it or not, it's love. When we're willing to speak into the lives of people for their spiritual growth and development. Now, the rest of this chapter, verse 1 literally was, let brotherly love continue. But then in verses 2 and 3, I got to stop. Okay, verse 2 and 3. He says, do not neglect to go show hospitalities for strangers, for in doing so, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Verse 2 is all about hospitality. You know what? Practicing love means being hospitable. Here in the South, my northern perspective, actually my Northern California perspective is, that in the South, everybody's hospitable. I know it used to be that way a long time ago. Southern hospitality. But hospitality is a critical action, an important element among believers. How do you practice brotherly love? By inviting people into your home. You might say, no one comes into my house. Well, okay, why? If you're going to start telling me my house is small or it's dirty or it's whatever, I can say, who cares about a small house as long as the food is good? If you're a bad cook, you can also invite someone else who can do the cooking. But if it's dirty, now that's something that you and I can talk about in a different location, okay? Hospitality is inviting people in to your home. I think that as followers of Messiah Yeshua, this is something that was demonstrated among the early believers, and it was so critical in building authentic community. You really want to know what someone's like, go into their home. Go into their home. How are you practicing brotherly love? By demonstrating hospitality. The basis of this back then was persecution. People needed a place to go and to eat and to hang out. Going into someone's home was a way of refuge. It was extremely important. But today we've lost a lot of that. I think it hurts us as followers of Messiah in building authenticity, a demonstration of brotherly love. How are you demonstrating brotherly love? By inviting people into your home. And in the second, the last verse is remembering the prisoners as if you were fellow prisoners. And those who were mistreated as if you were also suffering bodily. Here it's an understanding of brotherly love that we can't appreciate. Nobody here is getting thrown in prison for believing in Yeshua in America yet. All right? This is reality. I just heard a report. I don't know. I'm not going to mention the name, but I do know of a Jewish believer doing missionary work in Israel. And I'll use the M word because I don't know what I would. Doing outreach work there, but who's in prison right now. I don't know what the circumstances are. But I can't tell you his name off the top of my head. But this is a real situation right in line with this verse. Believers back then were getting thrown in prison. And back then, it wasn't three square meals a day and a comfortable cot. You were in a horrible situation. And if you didn't get food from your friends, you did not eat in those kind of prisons? How do we demonstrate love for those we know in the body of Messiah who are suffering for their faith? I know that your congregation has had a tremendous history of giving to needy causes. You guys have had that tradition. And so I probably don't need to say anything about this to you, but just to sum it up with the fact that among fellow believers who are persecuted, how do we demonstrate brotherly love? It's by remembering them, by praying for them, and within our ability, providing for them, according to what God has blessed us with. So, summing this up, how are you demonstrating your love for fellow believers? How are you doing it? How are you demonstrating your love? You show a genuine concern for the welfare of other people? Are there people you know that don't have the basic needs to live by in life, and yet you could provide it and solve their problem in a minute, but you're just not willing to do it? Think about how God could use you. Do you know of people that are struggling spiritually? How are you helping them to grow and develop? Who are you mentoring? Who are you discipling? Who are you encouraging? Who are you breaking bread and drinking caffeine with for their spiritual growth and development? Are you willing to humbly confront in love a fellow believer regarding their sin? Are you willing to do it? And then are you also willing to receive it? All of this is critically important if we are truly going to be a community known for its love. And I believe that's what God will use. We live in a time in America where there's no physical persecution, but the truth is we are feeling pressure. A lot of it's moral pressure. The more we can demonstrate genuine love with one another, the more I think God will use us outside of our communities with those who desperately need to know the truth of who Yeshua is. So let us love one another so that God might use us to demonstrate love for the gospel's sake to those around us. Let's close in a word of prayer. God, we thank you so much for the truth of your word and the challenge of it.